The neighing of the horses and the cries of the riders came to the ears of Glaurung, and he was well pleased. One of the elf riders, striving with his horse in the fog, saw suddenly the Lady Morwen passing near, a grey wraith upon a mad steed. But she vanished in the mist, crying, "Ni-en-all!" And they saw her no more. But when the blind terror came upon the riders, Nienor's horse, running wild, stumbled, and she was thrown. Falling softly into grass, she was unhurt, but when she got to her feet she was alone, lost in the mist, without horse or companion. Her heart did not fail her, and she took thought, and it seemed to her vain to go towards this cry or that, for cries were all about her, but growing ever fainter. Better it seemed to her in such case to seek again for the hill. Thither, doubtless, Mablung would come before he went away, if only to be sure that none of his company had remained there. Therefore, walking at guess, she found the hill, which was indeed close at hand, by the rising of the ground before her feet, and slowly she climbed the path that led up from the east. And as she climbed, so the fog grew thinner, until she came at last out into the sunlight on the bare summit. Then she stepped forward and looked westward, and there, right before her, was the great head of Glaurung, who had even then crept up from the other side. And before she was aware, her eyes had looked in the fell spirit of his eyes, and they were terrible, being filled with the fell spirit of Morgoth, his master. Strong was the will and heart of Nienor, and she strove against Glaurung, but he put forth his power against her. "What seek you here?" he said, and constrained to answer, she said, "I do but seek one Turin that dwelt here a while, but he is dead, maybe."
"I know not," said Glaurung. "He was left here to defend the women and weaklings, but when I came he deserted them and fled, a boaster, but a craven, it seems. Why seek you such a one?"
"You lie," said Nienor. "The children of Húrin, at least, are not craven. We fear you not." Then Glaurung laughed, for so was Húrin's daughter revealed to his malice.
"Then you are fools, both you and your brother," said he. "And your boast shall be made vain, for I am Glaurung."
Then he drew her eyes into his, and her will swooned. And it seemed to her that the sun sickened, and all became dim about her. And slowly a great darkness drew down on her, and in that darkness there was emptiness. She knew nothing, and heard nothing, and remembered nothing. Long Mablung explored the halls of Nargothrond, as well he might for the darkness and the stench, but he found no living thing there. Nothing stirred among the bones, and none answered his cries. At last, being oppressed by the horror of the place, and fearing the return of Glaurung, he came back to the doors. The sun was sinking west, and the shadows of the Faroth behind lay dark on the terraces and the wild river below. But away beneath Amon Ithir he descried, as it seemed, the evil shape of the dragon. Harder and more perilous was the return over Narog in such haste and fear, and scarcely had he reached the east shore and crept aside under the bank when Glaurung drew nigh. But he was slow now and stealthy, for all the fires in him were burned low. Great power had gone out of him, and he would rest and sleep in the dark. Thus he writhed through the water, and slunk up to the doors like a huge snake, ashen grey, sliming the ground with his belly. But he turned before he went in, and looked back eastward, and there came from him the laughter of Morgoth, dim but horrible, as an echo of malice out of the black depths far away. And this voice, cold and low, came after, "There you lie like a vole under the bank, Mablung the Mighty. Ill do you run the errands of Thingol. Haste you now to the hill, and see what is become of your charge." Then Glaurung passed into his lair, and the sun went down, and grey evening came chill over the land. But Mablung hastened back to Amon-Ethir, and as he climbed to the top, the stars came out in the east. Against them he saw there, standing, dark and still, a figure, as it were, an image of stone. Thus Nienor stood, and heard nothing that he said, and made him no answer. But when at last he took her hand, she stirred, and suffered him to lead her away, and while he held her, she followed. But if he loosed her, she stood still. Then great was Mablung's grief and bewilderment, but no other choice had he but to lead Nienor so upon the long eastward way, without help or company. Thus they passed away, walking like dreamers, out into the night-shadowed plain. And when morning returned, Nienor stumbled and fell and lay still, and Mablung sat beside her in despair. "Not for nothing did I dread this errand," he said, "for it will be my last, it seems. With this unlucky child of men I shall perish in the wilderness, and my name shall be held in scorn in Doriath, if any tidings indeed are ever heard of our fate. All else, doubtless, are slain, and she alone spared, but not in mercy." Thus they were found by three of the company that had fled from Narog at the coming of Glaurung, and after much wandering, when the mist had passed, went back to the hill, and finding it empty, they had begun to seek their way home. Hope then returned to Mablung, and they went on now together, steering northward and eastward, for there was no road back into Doriath in the south, and since the fall of Nargothrond, the ferry wards were forbidden to set any across, save those that came from within. Slow is their journey, as for those that lead a weary child. But ever as they passed further from Nargothrond and drew nearer to Doriath, so little by little strength returned to Nienor, and she would walk hour by hour obediently, led by the hand. Yet her wide eyes saw nothing, and her ears heard no words, and her lips spoke no words. And now at length, after many days, they came nigh to the west border of Doriath, somewhat south of the Teiglin. For they intended to pass the fences of the little land of Thingol beyond Sirion, and so come to the guarded bridge near the inflowing of Escalduin. There a while they halted, and they laid Nienor on a couch of grass, and she closed her eyes, as she had not yet done, and it seemed that she slept. Then the elves rested also, and for very weariness were unheedful. Thus They were assailed at unawares by a band of orc hunters, such as now roamed much in that region, as nigh to the fences of Doriath as they dared to go. In the midst of the affray, suddenly Nienor leapt up from her couch as one waking out of sleep to an alarm by night, and with a cry she sped away into the forest. Then the orcs turned and gave chase, and the elves after them. But a strange change had come upon Nienor, and now she outran them all, flying like a deer among the trees, with her hair streaming in the wind of her speed. The orcs, indeed, Mablung and his companions swiftly overtook, and they slew them, one and all, and hastened on. But by then Nienor had passed away like a wraith. Neither sight nor slot of her could they find, though they hunted far northward and searched for many days. Then at last Mablung returned to Doriath, bowed with grief and with shame. "Choose you a new master of your hunters, lord," he said to the king, "for I am dishonored." But Melian said, "It is not so, Mablung. You did all that you could, and none other among the king's servants would have done so much. But by ill chance you were matched against a power too great for you, too great indeed for all that now dwell in Middle-earth. I sent you to win tidings, and that you have done," said Thingol. "It is no fault of yours that those whom your tidings touch nearest are now beyond hearing. Grievous indeed is this end of all Húrin's kin, but it lies not at your door." For not only was Nienor now run witless into the wild, but Morwen also was lost. Neither then nor after did any certain news of her fate come to Doriath or to Dol Lomin. Nonetheless, Mablung would not rest, and with a small company he went into the wild, and for 3 years wandered far, from Eredwethryn even to the mouths of Sirion, seeking for sign or tidings of the lost. Chapter 15. Nienor in Brethil. But as for Nienor, she ran on into the wood, hearing the shouts of pursuit come behind, and her clothing she tore off, casting away her garments one by one as she fled, until she went naked. And all that day still she ran, as a beast that is hunted to heart bursting, and dare not stay or draw breath. But at evening, suddenly her madness passed. She stood still a moment, as in wonder, and then, in a swoon of utter weariness, she fell, as one stricken, down into a deep brake of fern. And there, amid the old bracken and the swift fronds of spring, she lay and slept, heedless of all. In the morning she woke and rejoiced in the light, as one first called to life, and all things that she saw seemed to her new and strange, and she had no names for them, for behind her lay only an empty darkness, through which came no memory of anything she had ever known, nor any echo of any word. A shadow of fear only she remembered, and so she was wary, and sought ever for hidings. She would climb into trees, or slip into thickets, swift as a squirrel or fox, if any sound or shadow frightened her. Thence she would peer long through the leaves with shy eyes, before she went on again. Thus, going forward in the way she first ran, she came to the river Teiglin and stayed athirst. But no food she found, nor knew how to seek it, and she was famished and cold. And since the trees across the water seemed closer and darker, as indeed they were, being the eaves of Brethil Forest, she crossed over at last, and came to a green mound, and there cast herself down, for she was spent, and it seemed to her that the darkness that lay behind her was overtaking her again, and the sun going dark. But indeed it was a black storm that came up out of the south, laden with lightning and great rain, and she lay there cowering in terror of the thunder, and the dark rain smote her nakedness, and she watched without words as a wild thing that is trapped. Now it chanced that some of the woodmen of Brethil came by in that hour from a foray against orcs, hastening over the crossings of Teiglin to a shelter that was near, and there came a great flash of lightning, so that the howth in Eleth was lit as with a white flame. Then Turambar, who led the men, started back and covered his eyes and trembled, for it seemed that he saw the wraith of a slain maiden that lay on the grave of Finduilas. But one of the men ran to the mound and called to him, "Hither, Lord! Here is a young woman lying, and she lives!" And Turambar, coming, lifted her, and the water dripped from her drenched hair. But she closed her eyes, and quivered, and strove no more. Then, marvelling that she lay thus naked, Turambar cast his cloak about her, and bore her away to the hunter's lodge in the woods. There they lit a fire, and wrapped coverlets about her, and she opened her eyes and looked upon them. And when her glance fell on Turambar, a light came in her face, and she put out a hand towards him, for it seemed to her that she had found at last something that she had sought in the darkness, and she was comforted. But Turambar took her hand and smiled, and said, "Now, lady, will you not tell us your name and your kin, and what evil has befallen you?" Then she shook her head and said nothing, but began to weep. And they troubled her no more, until she had eaten hungrily of what food they could give her. And when she had eaten, she sighed, and laid her hand again in Turambar's. And he said, "With us you are safe. Here you may rest this night, and in the morning we will lead you to our homes up in the high forest. But we would know your name and your kin, so that we may find them, maybe, and bring them news of you. Will you not tell us?" But again she made no answer, and wept. "Do not be troubled," said Turambar. "Maybe the tale is too sad yet to tell, but I will give you a name, and call you Niniel, Maid of Tears." And at that name she looked up, and she shook her head, but said, "Niniel." And that was the first word that she spoke after her darkness, and it was her name among the woodmen ever after. In the morning they bore Niniel towards Efel Brandir, and the road went steeply up until it came to a place where it must cross the tumbling stream of Celebros. There a bridge of wood had been built, and below it the stream went over a lip of worn stone, and fell down by many foaming steps into a rocky bowl far below, and all the air was filled with spray like rain. There was a wide green sward at the head of the falls, and birches grew about it, but over the bridge there was a wide view towards the ravines of Teiglin, some 2 miles to the west. There the air was ever cool, and there wayfarers in summer would rest and drink of the cold water. Dim Rost, the rainy stair, those falls were called. But after that day, Nen Girith, the shuddering water. For Turambar and his men halted there, but as soon as Niniel came to that place, she grew cold and shivered, and they could not warm her or comfort her. Therefore they hastened on their way. But before they came to Efelbrandir, Niniel was wandering in a fever. Long she lay in her sickness, and Brandir used all his skill in her healing, and the wives of the woodmen watched over her by night and by day, but only when Turambar stayed near her would she lie at peace, or sleep without moaning. And this thing all marked that watched her. Throughout all her fever, though often she was much troubled, she murmured never a word in any tongue of elves or of men. And when health slowly returned to her, and she waked and began to eat again, then, as with a child, the women of Brethil must teach her to speak word by word. But in this learning she was quick, and took great delight, as one that finds again treasures, great and small, that were mislaid. And when at length she had learned enough to speak with her friends, she would say, "What is the name of this thing? For in my darkness I lost it." When she was able to go about again, she would seek the house of Brandir, for she was most eager to learn the names of all living things, and he knew much of such matters, and they would walk together in the gardens and the glades. Then Brandir grew to love her, and when she grew strong, she would lend him her arm for his lameness, and she called him her brother. But to Turambar her heart was given, and only at his coming would she smile, and only when he spoke gaily would she laugh. One evening of the golden autumn they sat together, and the sun set the hillside and the houses of Efelbrandir aglow, and there was a deep quiet. Then Niniel said to him, "Of all things I have now asked the name, save you, what are you called?" "Turambar," he answered. Then she paused as if listening for some echo, but she said, "And what does that say, or is it just the name for you alone?" "It means," said he, "Master of the Dark Shadow. For I also, Niniel, had my darkness, in which dear things were lost. But now I have overcome it, I deem." "And did you also flee from it, running, until you came to these fair woods?" she said. "And when did you escape Turambar?" "Yes," he answered. "I fled for many years. And I escaped when you did so, for it was dark when you came, Niniel, but ever since it has been light. And it seems to me that what I long sought in vain has come to me." And as he went back to his house in the twilight, he said to himself, "How then, Eleth? From the green mound she came. Is that a sign? And how shall I read it?" Now that golden year waned, and passed to a gentle winter, and there came another bright year. There was peace in Brethil, and the woodmen held themselves quiet, and went not abroad, and they heard no tidings of the lands that lay about them, for the orcs that at that time came southward to the dark reign of Glaurung, or was sent to spy on the borders of Doriath, shunned the crossings of Teiglin, and passed westward far beyond the river. And now Niniel was fully healed, and was grown fair
and strong, and Turambar restrained himself no longer, but asked her in marriage. Then Niniel was glad. But when Brandir heard of it, his heart was sick within him, and he said to her, "Be not in haste. Think me not unkindly if I counsel you to wait. Nothing that you do is done unkindly," she said. "But why then do you give me such counsel, wise brother?"
"Wise brother," he answered. "Lame brother, rather. Unloved and unlovely, and I scarce know why. Yet there lies a shadow on this man, and I am afraid."
"There was a shadow," said Niniel, "for so he told me. But he has escaped from it, even as I, and is he not worthy of love? Though he now holds himself at peace, was he not once the greatest captain, from whom all our enemies would flee if they saw him?"
"Who told you this?" said Brandir.
"It was Dorlas," she said. "Does he not speak truth?"
"Truth, indeed," said Brandir. But he was ill-pleased, for Dorlas was chief of that party that wished for war on the Orcs, and yet he sought still for reasons to delay Niniel, and he said therefore, "The truth, but not the whole truth, for he was the captain of Nargothrond, and came before out of the north, and was, it is said, son of Húrin of Dol Lomín, of the warlike house of Hador." And Brandir, seeing the shadow that passed over her face at that name, misread her, and said more. "Indeed, Niniel, well may you think that such a one is likely ere long to go back to war, far from this land, maybe. And if so, how long will you endure it? Have a care, for I forebode that if Turambar goes again to battle, then not he, but the shadow, shall have the mastery."
"Ill would I endure it," she answered, "but unwedded no better than wedded, and a wife, maybe, would better restrain him and hold off the shadow."
Nonetheless, she was troubled by the words of Brandir, and she bade Turambar wait yet a while. And he wondered, and was downcast. But when he learned from Niniel that Brandir had counselled her to wait, he was ill-pleased. But when the next spring came, he said to Niniel, "Time passes. We have waited, and now I will wait no longer. Do as your heart bids you, Niniel most dear. But see, this is the choice before me. I will go back now to war in the wild, or I will wed you and go never to war again, save only to defend you if some evil assails our home." Then she was glad indeed, and she plighted her troth, and at the midsummer they were wedded, and the woodmen made a great feast, and they gave them a fair house which they had built for them upon Amon Obel. There they dwelt in happiness. But Brandir was troubled, and the shadow on his heart grew deeper. Chapter 16. The Coming of Glaurung. Now the power and malice of Glaurung grew apace, and he waxed fat, and he gathered orcs to him, and ruled as a dragon king. And all the realm of Nargothrond that had been was laid under him. And before this year ended, the third of Turambar's dwelling among the woodmen, he began to assail their land, which for a while had had peace. For it was well known to Glaurung and to his master that in Brethil there abode a remnant of free men, the last of the three houses to defy the power of the north, and this they would not brook, for it was the purpose of Morgoth to subdue all Beleriand and to search out its every corner, so that none in any hole or hiding might live that were not thrall to him. Thus, whether Glaurung guessed where Turin was hidden, or whether, as some hold, he had indeed, by that time, escaped from the eye of evil that pursued him, is of little matter. For in the end, the counsels of Brandir must prove vain, and at the last, two choices only could there be for Turambar: to sit deedless until he was found, driven forth like a rat, or to go forth soon to battle and be revealed. But when tidings of the coming of the orcs were first brought to Ethelbrandir, he did not go forth, and yielded to the prayers of Niniel, for she said, "Our homes are not yet assailed, as your word was. It is said that the orcs are not many, and Dorlas told me that before you came such affrays were not seldom, and the woodmen held them off." But the woodmen were worsted, for these orcs were of a fell breed, fierce and cunning, and indeed they came with a purpose to invade the forest of Brethil, not, as before, passing through its eaves on other errands, or hunting in small bands. Therefore Dorlas and his men were driven back with loss, and the orcs came over Teiglin and roamed far into the woods. And Dorlas came to Turambar and showed his wounds, and he said, "See, Lord, now is the time of our need come upon us, after a false peace, even as I foreboded. Did you not ask to be counted one of our people, and no stranger? Is this peril not yours also? For our homes will not remain hidden if the orcs come further into our land." Therefore Turambar arose, and took up again his sword Gurthang, and he went to battle. And when the woodmen learned this, they were greatly heartened, and they gathered to him till he had a force of many hundreds. Then they hunted through the forest, and slew all the orcs that crept there, and hung them on the trees near the crossings of Teiglin. And when a new host came against them, they trapped it, and being surprised both by the numbers of the woodmen and by the terror of the black sword that had returned, the orcs were routed and slain in great number. Then the woodmen made great pyres and burned the bodies of the soldiers of Morgoth in heaps, and the smoke of their vengeance rose black into heaven, and the wind bore it away westward. But few living went back to Nargothrond with these tidings. Then Glaurung was wrathful indeed, but for a while he lay still and pondered what he had heard. Thus the winter passed in peace, and men said, "Great is the black sword of Brethil, for all our enemies are overcome." And Niniel was comforted, and she rejoiced in the renown of Turambar. But he sat in thought, and he said in his heart, "The die is cast. Now comes the test, in which my boast shall be made good, or fail utterly. I will flee no more. Turambar, indeed, I will be, and by my own will and prowess I will surmount my doom, or fall." But falling or riding, Glaurung at least I will slay. Nonetheless he was unquiet, and he sent out men of daring as scouts far afield. For indeed, though no word was said, he now ordered things as he would, as if he were lord of Brethil, and no man heeded Brandir. Spring came hopefully, and men sang at their work. But in that spring Niniel conceived, and she became pale and wan, and all her happiness was dimmed. And soon after there came strange tidings from the men that had gone abroad beyond Teiglin, that there was a great burning far out in the woods of the plain towards Nargothrond, and men wondered what it might be. But before long there came more reports that the fires drew ever northward, and that indeed Glaurung himself made them, for he had left Nargothrond and was abroad again on some errand. Then the more foolish, or more hopeful, said, "His army is destroyed, and now at last he sees wisdom, and is going back whence he came." And others said, "Let us hope that he will pass us by." But Turembar had no such hope, and knew that Glaurung was coming to seek him. Therefore, though he masked his mind because of Niniel, he pondered ever by day and by night what counsel he should take, and spring turned towards summer. A day came when two men returned to Ethelbrandir in terror, for they had seen the great worm himself.
"In truth, lord," he said, "he draws now near to Teiglin, and turns not aside. He lay in the midst of a great burning, and the trees smoked about him. The stench of him is scarce to be endured, and all the long leagues back to Nargothrond his foul swath lies, we deem, in a line that swerves not, but points straight to us. What is to be done?"
"Little," said Turembar, "but to that little I have already given thought. The tidings you bring give me hope rather than dread, for if indeed he goes straight, as you say, and does not swerve, then I have some counsel for hardy hearts." The men wondered, for he said no more at that time, but they took heart from his steadfast bearing. Now the river Teiglin ran in this manner. It flowed down from Eredwethryn, swift as Narog, but at first between low shores, until after the crossings, gathering power from other streams, it clove away through the feet of the highlands upon which stood the forest of Brethil. Thereafter it ran in deep ravines, whose great sides were like walls of rock, but pent at the bottom the waters flowed with great force and noise, and right in the path of Glaurung there lay now one of these gorges, by no means the deepest, but the narrowest, just north of the inflow of Celebros. Therefore Turembar sent out three hardy men to keep watch from the brink on the movements of the dragon, but he himself would ride to the high fall of Nengirith, where news could find him swiftly, and whence he himself could look far across the lands. But first he gathered the woodmen together in Ethelbrandir, and spoke to them, saying, "Men of Brethil, a deadly peril has come upon us, which only great hardihood shall turn aside. But in this matter numbers will avail little. We must use cunning, and hope for good fortune. If we went up against the dragon with all our strength, as against an army of orcs, we should but offer ourselves all to death, and so leave our wives and kin defenceless. Therefore I say that you should stay here, and prepare for flight. For if Glaurung comes, then you must abandon this place, and scatter far and wide, and so may some escape, and live. For certainly if he can, he will destroy it, and all that he espies. But afterwards he will not abide here. In Nargothrond lies all his treasure, and there are the deep holes in which he can lie safe and grow. Then the men were dismayed, and were utterly downcast, for they trusted in Turambar, and had looked for more hopeful words. But he said, "Nay, that is the worst, and it shall not come to pass, if my counsel and fortune are good. For I do not believe that this dragon is unconquerable, though he grows greater in strength and malice with the years. I know somewhat of him. His power is rather in the evil spirit that dwells within him than in the might of his body, great though that be. For hear now this tale that I was told by some that fought in the year of the Nirnaeth, when I, and most that hear me, were children. In that field the dwarves withstood him, and Azaghal of Belagost pricked him so deep that he fled back to Angband. But here is a thorn sharper and longer than the knife of Azaghal." And Turambar swept Gurthang from its sheath, and stabbed with it above his head, and it seemed to those that looked on that a flame leapt from Turambar's hand many feet into the air. Then they gave a great cry, "The Black Thorn of Brethil!" "The Black Thorn of Brethil," said Turambar, "well may he fear it, for know this, it is the doom of this dragon, and all his brood, it is said, that how great soever be his armour of horn, harder than iron, below he must go with the belly of a snake. Therefore, men of Brethil, I go now to seek the belly of Glaurung, by what means I may. Who will come with me? I need but a few with strong arms and stronger hearts." Then Dorlas stood forth and said, "I will go with you, lord, for I would ever go forward rather than wait for a foe." But no others were so swift to the call, for the dread of Glaurung lay on them, and the tale of the scouts that had seen him had gone about and grown in the telling. Then Dorlas cried out, "Hearken, men of Brethil! It is now well seen that for the evil of our times the counsels of Brandir were vain. There is no escape by hiding. Will none of you take the place of the son of Handir, that the house of Haleth be not put to shame?" Thus Brandir, who sat indeed in the high seat of the lord of the assembly, but unheeded, was scorned, and he was bitter in his heart. For Turambar did not rebuke Dorlas. But one, Hunthor, Brandir's kinsman, arose and said, "You do evilly, Dorlas, to speak thus to the shame of your lord, whose limbs by ill hazard cannot do as his heart would. Beware, lest the contrary be seen in you at some turn. And how can it be said that his counsels were vain, when they were never taken? You, his liege, have ever set them at naught. I say to you that Glaurung comes now to us, as to Nargothrond before, because our deeds have betrayed us, as he feared. But since this woe is now come, with your leave, son of Handir, I will go on behalf of Haleth's house." Then Turambar said, "Three is enough. You twain will I take, but, lord, I do not scorn you. See, we must go in great haste, and our task will need strong limbs. I deem that your place is with your people, for you are wise and are a healer, and it may be that there will be great need of wisdom and healing ere long. At these words, though fair spoken, did but embitter Brandir the more, and he said to Hunthor, Go then, but not with my leave, for a shadow lies on this man, and it will lead you to evil. Now Turambar was in haste to go, but when he came to Niniel to bid her farewell, she clung to him, weeping grievously.
Go not forth, Turambar, I beg, she said. Challenge not the shadow that you have fled from. Nay, nay, flee still, and take me with you far away.
Niniel, most dear, he answered, we cannot flee further, you and I. We are hemmed in this land, and even should I go, deserting the people that befriended us, I could but take you forth into the houseless wild, to your death, and the death of our child. 100 leagues lie between us, and any land that is yet beyond the reach of the shadow. But take heart, Niniel, for I say to you, neither you nor I shall be slain by this dragon, nor by any foes of the north. Then Niniel ceased to weep, and fell silent, but her kiss was cold as they parted. Then Turambar, with Dolas and Hunthor, went away hot-foot to Nen-Girith, and when they came there the sun was westering, and shadows were long, and the last two of the scouts were there awaiting them. You come not too soon, lord, said they, for the dragon has come on, and already when we left he had reached the brink of the Teglin, and glared across the water. He moves ever by night, and we may look then for some stroke before tomorrow's dawn. Turambar looked out over the falls of Celebros, and saw the sun going down to its setting, and black spires of smoke rising by the borders of the river. There is no time to lose, he said. Yet these tidings are good, for my fear was that he would seek about. And if he passed northward, and came to the crossings, and so to the old road in the lowland, then hope would be dead. But now some fury of pride and malice drives him headlong. But even as he spoke he wondered, and mused in his mind, or can it be that one so evil and fell shuns the crossings, even as the orcs? Howth en Eleth, does Finduilas lie still between me and my doom? Then he turned to his companions and said, This task now lies before us. We must wait yet a little, for too soon in this case we're as ill as too late. When dusk falls, we must creep down with all stealth to Teglin. But beware, for the ears of Glaurung are as keen as his eyes, and they are deadly. If we reach the river unmarked, we must then climb down into the ravine, and cross the water, and so come in the path that he will take when he stirs. But how can he come forward so? Said Dolas. Lithe he may be, but he is a great dragon. And how shall he climb down the one cliff and up the other, when part must again be climbing before the hinder part is yet descended? And if he can so, what would it avail us to be in the wild water below? Maybe he can so, answered Turambar, and indeed if he does, it will go ill with us. But it is my hope, from what we learn of him and from the place where he now lies, that his purpose is otherwise. He has come to the brink of Kabed en Arras, over which, as you tell, a deer once leaped from the huntsman of Haleth. So great is he now that I think he will seek to cast himself across there. That is all our hope, and we may trust to it. Dorlas's heart sank at these words, for he knew, better than any, all the land of Brethil, and Cabed en Arras was a grim place indeed. On the east side was a sheer cliff of some 40 feet, bare, but tree-grown at the crown. On the other side was a bank somewhat less sheer and less high, shrouded with hanging trees and bushes. But between them the water ran fiercely between rocks, and though a man bold and sure-footed might ford it by day, it was perilous to dare it at night. But this was the council of Turambar, and it was useless to gainsay him. They set out therefore at dusk, and they did not go straight towards the dragon, but took first the path towards the crossings. Then, before they came so far, they turned southward by a narrow track and passed into the twilight of the woods above Teiglin. And as they drew near to Cabed en Arras, step by step, halting often to listen, the reek of burning came to them, and a stench that sickened them. But all was deadly still, and there was no stir of air. The first stars glimmered in the east before them, and faint spires of smoke rose, straight and unwavering against the last light in the west. Now when Turambar was gone, Niniel stood silent as a stone. But Brandir came to her and said, "Niniel, fear not the worst until you must. But did I not counsel you to wait?"
"You did so," she answered. "Yet how would that profit me now? For love may abide and suffer unwedded."
"That I know," said Brandir. "Yet wedding is not for nothing."
"No," said Niniel, "for now I am 2 months gone with his child. But it does not seem to me that my fear of loss is the more heavy to bear. I understand you not."
"Nor I myself," said he, "and yet I am afraid."
"What a comforter you are," she cried. "But Brandir, friend, wedded or unwedded, mother or maid, my dread is beyond enduring. The master of doom is gone to challenge his doom far hence, and how shall I stay here and wait for the slow coming of tidings, good or ill? This night, it may be, he will meet with the dragon, and how shall I stand, or sit, or pass the dreadful hours?"
"I know not," said he, "but somehow the hours must pass, for you and for the wives of those that went with him."
"Let them do as their hearts bid," she cried, "but for me, I shall go. The miles shall not lie between me and my lord's peril. I will go to meet the tidings."
Then Brundir's dread grew black at her words, and he cried,
"That you shall not do, if I may hinder it, for thus will you endanger all counsel. The miles that lie between may give time for escape, if ill befall."
"If ill befall, I shall not wish to escape," she said. "And now your wisdom is vain, and you shall not hinder me."
And she stood forth before the people that were still gathered in the open place of the Efel, and she cried,
"Men of Brethil, I will not wait here. If my lord fails, then all hope is false. Your land and woods shall be burned utterly, and all your houses laid in ashes, and none, none shall escape. Therefore, why tarry here? Now I go to meet the tidings, and whatever doom may send. Let all those of like mind come with me."
Then many were willing to go with her, the wives of Dorlas and Hunthor, because those whom they loved were gone with Turambar, others for pity of Niniel and desire to befriend her, and many more that were lured by the very rumour of the dragon, in their hardihood or their folly, knowing little of evil, thinking to see strange and glorious deeds. For indeed, so great in their minds had the black sword become, that few could believe that even Glaurung would conquer him. Therefore they set forth soon, in haste, a great company, towards a peril that they did not understand. And going with little rest, they came wearily at last, just at nightfall, to Nengirith, but a little while after Turambar had departed. At night is a cold counsellor, and many were now amazed at their own rashness. And when they heard from the scouts that remained there how near Glaurung was come, and the desperate purpose of Turambar, their hearts were chilled, and they dared go no further. Some looked out towards Kabed and Arras with anxious eyes, but nothing could they see, and nothing hear, save the cold voice of the falls. And Niniel sat apart, and a great shuddering seized her. When Niniel and her company had gone, Brendir said to those that remained, "Behold how I am scorned, and all my counsel disdained! Choose you another to lead you, for here I renounce both lordship and people. Let Turambar be your lord in name, since already he has taken all my authority. Let none seek of me ever again either counsel or healing." And he broke his staff. To himself he thought, "How nothing is left to me, save only my love of Niniel. Therefore, where she goes, in wisdom or folly, I must go. In this dark hour, nothing can be foreseen, but it may well chance that even I could ward off some evil from her, if I were nigh." He girt himself, therefore, with a short sword, as seldom before, and took his crutch, and went with what speed he might out of the gate of the Efel, limping after the others down the long path to the west march of Brethil. Chapter 17. The Death of Glaurung. At last, even as full night closed over the land, Turambar and his companions came to Kabed in Arras, and they were glad of the great noise of the water, although it promised peril below.